Hello and welcome to Zest and Progress, a podcast that uncovers athlete stories of resilience, energy, and self-confidence. I'm your host, Leah Clapper, and on today's show, I'm chatting with Jeremy Miranda. Jeremy is a professional dancer, former elite gymnast, and incredible choreographer. He has performed on Broadway, cruise lines, television shows, and more, and he takes care of the magical Disney shows in Orlando. He has also been the volunteer assistant coach for the University of Florida gymnastics team for the past 14 seasons and is the choreographer behind the Gators' floor routines. Jeremy is one of the most positive, supportive, and energetic people I know, and I can't wait to share this conversation. Let's zest it up. All right. How are you doing today?
Hi, Leah. Thank you so much for having me on your podcast. I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm wonderful. And I'm so excited that you're here. And I can't wait to chat today. So to start, I'd love for you to share a bit of your background and how you got to where you are today.
Absolutely. So it's kind of a crazy, convoluted, twisted story as to how I got to where I am today. And I would have never thought in a million years, starting where I started, I'd end up where I've ended up so far. So I started out loving gymnastics, I think, just like all of us, that, you know, we were tumbling around all the time, my house, my brother, my sister, we all kind of just loved flipping around. We would pull mom's mattress off the bed. She'd come home and she'd be upset because, you know, everything would be laid out in the living room and we'd be flipping around. So it got to the point where mom was like, "You guys really, we need to enroll you in some type of formal gymnastics training." And so I started seriously training gymnastics at the age of 7, like most gymnasts that start young. And unfortunately, I grew up in South Dakota, middle of nowhere. So we had to drive an hour each way just to train. So it got to a point where things got serious enough to where I needed to either make the decision to train more full-time and be serious about the sport, or, you know, just decide that it's going to be a recreational thing for me. And of course, I chose to go the more serious route. And throughout my training, we had 3 days a week of dance. And so that was just like a part of our curriculum, to dance as a part of our warm-up. And so I didn't ever have any real formal dance training, but I was introduced to dance at a very young age. I was also just very theatrical. I did lots of shows. We had a program called Missoula Children's Theater that came through every summer. And I, of course, like lived to be cast in those types of shows. I just loved being on stage and I loved performing. Gymnastics was a passion of mine all the way through high school. And I went to the University of Nebraska with the idea of doing gymnastics in college in mind. And it took a turn where I ended up meeting Dan Kendig at the University of Nebraska, the head women's coach at the time. And I started working with the women's program in a managerial position. And that ended up transitioning into more choreography. And so while I was doing club gymnastics, we would bring in a professional choreographer and she would work with the kids. And this was back when there was, you know, the VHS recorders on the tripods. We didn't have the iPhones and the amazing technology that we have today. And so oftentimes we didn't record the routines, but I just had a brain to where I would be vaulting or on another event, and I could just watch what was going on the floor with the choreographer, and I could see movement and see sequence and remember it. And so when the choreographer would leave, the girls would be in their corner trying to remember what the heck their choreography was, and I'd just run over and show them. I didn't necessarily know the steps or know the language, but I could articulate and show exactly what the positions were. And everybody was always like, "How do you know that? That's so crazy." And so not until college, when I was working with the University of Nebraska team, did I really get serious about starting to study dance and study the craft, because I thought, heck, if I'm actually working in this field, I should probably know what I'm talking about. And so I ended up getting my degree in dance performance, finishing my degree at the University of Florida. I transferred there my junior season. And actually, that was the year after Adrian Burdett got the job at Florida. So I worked with Adrian at the University of Nebraska, and then a year later came to the University of Florida and started working with him again there. So we've been together, we've known each other for a long time, which has been pretty amazing. But I was really, really fortunate, even though I didn't have a strong background in dance, I had a ton of body awareness and, you know, time spent doing gymnastics and things like that, and was strong. So I was able to pick up dancers and lift them and do all of that sort of fun stuff. And so thankfully I was admitted to the University of Florida's very, very small dance program. They only take four guys and four girls each year that they admit to the program. And so it was just an amazing immersive experience to where I could dance literally from morning until afternoon every single day and then go to practice and basically teach what I know to the gymnastics team. I would lead line drills, we would do dances and just play. And so that was just an amazing, like I said, immersive experience. And then after I graduated from the University of Florida in 2010, I moved right up to New York City and I signed with a talent agent, McDonald Snelznick Associates, which I'm still currently with. It's been an amazing several years with them and just had the pleasure of performing on many stages all over the world. My career has just taken me every sort of place. And I've been so thankful to just have the mentality to say yes to all of those experiences and to go for it, even if it's over in Japan or China or in Europe or out on the water, you know, on a cruise ship. And so I've been so grateful to not only have those experiences, but also to still stay involved with the University of Florida and continually choreograph for them for the last 14 seasons, which is crazy.
Wow. Oh my goodness. That is such a cool story. And there is so much that I just want to know so much more about. But I guess an overarching question that I would love for you to answer is, what experience out of all those things you just talked about do you think had the biggest influence on your life, and how did that impact you?
I would say none of those experiences had the biggest impact. I would say my parents did. I truly believe that I had the best of both worlds. My mom was the very realist, you need to make a living. She was very real. She was, you know, you had just very practical. Whereas my dad was the dreamer. He was always like, follow your dreams, follow your passion, do wherever your heart takes you, that's the direction you need to go. And so I think that having that yin and yang, that balance, was probably the best thing to help spearhead my career and drive me to do the things that I've done. You know, it had that realistic piece where I know I needed to get X, Y, and Z done, but then I also had this passion, this fire inside of me to create and be artistic and be on stage and perform and to not stifle those feelings, but to actually go for it and just full force trust that everything was going to be okay.
That's such an amazing quality to have. And you can definitely see it in just the way that you carry yourself, that you're up for anything, but also still so practical and just innovative and imaginative and so amazing. Tell me more about that yes mentality that you mentioned. How do you think that has played a role in your life? And have you ran into challenges with that, or has it been all positive experiences from being like, yes, I'll do this, yes, I'll do that?
Well, I think a lot of people will tell you that when you start saying yes, so many more doors and windows start to open up. And I definitely saw that. You know, when I was just starting out in my career, it's easy to say like, oh no, I'm going to hold out for those big contracts. I'm going to wait for that Broadway contract or that dream job or that. And it didn't take me long to realize that I needed to just have experience and I wanted to have experiences. And so I just started saying yes to even the smallest projects, the silliest gigs. I mean, as any performer that moves to New York City, you take on the craziest of jobs, you know, whether it's background work on shows, whether it's being, I was actually a bowling pin in Times Square for a bowling alley that opened up on 42nd Street. And so I was one of their like promo characters for a while. Like, you do any and everything just to get out there and get the experience and to pay the rent because it's so expensive in New York City. But like I said, you just start saying yes and you start to see those windows and doors open up for you. And so therein lies the challenge, because then you start to overbook yourself. You find yourself saying yes to so many things that then you're starting to spread yourself so thin that you can't deliver the quality that you want to deliver for each of those projects. And then you have to start saying no, or start to figure out, okay, out of these options, which is going to help me take the next step.
Right. Definitely. And I think you brought up a bunch of great points, that saying yes opens those doors, But once you have those opportunities and you're taking on all these ambitious projects or whatever it is you're doing, you can always start saying no. And if you don't say yes first, then you're missing out on something. But once you have a bunch of things on your plate, it can be hard at times, but you will eventually realize that maybe I am spreading myself too thin. And that's when you can begin to whittle down. But it's not until you say yes to be able to do all these cool things in the first place. So I love how you talked about that. And that's just super cool. That's really funny about the bowling pin story. What was another crazy or funky or just random thing that you did dancing, or your craziest role that you've done so far?
Oh gosh. I mean, I have so many fond memories of many shows that I've done. Cats will always stick out in my mind as a signature show because there's really no Broadway show like it, where you're an animal literally the entire time. You're a cat. You're crawling on all fours. You're playing in the junkyard. But I would say some of my favorite memories or things that I love to look back upon is the silly things that happen on stage, the miscues, the somebody forgets a prop or a costume piece falls off, or, you know, it's those moments that you can just look back at and laugh at, that in the moment it was really serious and you were probably upset or your castmates were upset, but to reflect upon it, it was really hilarious. And so I would say moments like that, I look back on really fondly.
That's awesome. What would you say your favorite part of New York City was?
Just the arts and the culture and just everything right there at your disposal. Everybody that moves to New York, especially I would say in the arts, but probably in any field, is very passionate about what they do. And they're willing to live a hard life, you know, where you're really living on top of millions of people and you're in the subways every single day underground. And it's just, it's not a comfortable life. It's not, you don't have a 4-bedroom, 2-bath home and, you know, the beautiful Florida weather like we are so spoiled with here. It's a struggle. And so that your passion is strong enough to where you are willing to sacrifice those conveniences for your art or for whatever your talent is. And so I just think having like all that amazing food and just being surrounded by all those amazing people, that really is what I just could, you could feel the pulse, the energy of the city, and it wears on you because it's exhausting. You feel like in a year's time, you've probably aged 5 years, but just that invigoration, that zest, if you will, it really resounds in your body. And I really, really thrived off of that. I felt really creative in that space.
Nice. That's awesome. I know whenever I visited New York City, it's just such a special place. And I love it there. I'm actually visiting this summer, so I'm very excited about that. But it's kind of a place like no other. And it's so fun to hear about people's experiences in big cities. And I feel like it's a place I wouldn't be able to live in for my whole life. You know what I mean? But it's something that I would love to experience for sure.
So. Yeah. And that's truly how I felt too. When I moved there right after, I knew I needed to move there straight away after college because I didn't want to get that cold feet syndrome where I was like, I don't know if I'm ready. And you start to, you know, that self-doubt and the negative mentality. I knew that I just needed to jump 2 feet full board into it. And so that's what I did. Literally, I graduated and the very next, I think it was like 2 days later, I was on a flight up to New York City and didn't have an apartment picked out, didn't have anything picked out, you know, just literally was like, let's go, let's do it, let's figure it out. And wow. And it was hard to wrap that up. You know, I lived there 10 years and I still miss it, but I know that it's just a flight away. I know that if I need that fix, I can go and see some Broadway shows and reconnect with old friends. And it's easily accessible.
Definitely. I can't believe you literally just got up and went and had no plans. That's just insane. Would you say that you are a pretty spontaneous person in general, or was that a huge out of normal personality moment for you?
I would say that was pretty abnormal for me, even though it was spontaneous. I did have some feelers out, like there were some possibilities of things that could happen, but I knew that I needed to be there for those things to actually come to fruition. So yes, it was flying by the seat of my pants and just moving because I didn't have anything in concrete solidified yet, but I also had things in the works. So it wasn't, that was the mom side of me making sure that at least I had something more or less happening that was going to happen. I just didn't know which of those things yet.
Gotcha. That makes sense. So you've got the practical part of it. You've got the amazing dream, but I can imagine that still took a huge leap of faith to have that courage to, you know, go out and do something amazing like that. Would you say, I guess in general, do you have any regrets? Or I know some people don't even believe in feeling regret, but is there anything that you would do differently if you were, say, 18 years old again?
Honestly, no. There's really nothing that I did that I wished, oh, I would have done this instead of that. I am so thankful for every experience. You learn something, whether it be positive or negative. And I needed that. I needed that growth, whether it be positive or negative, in order for me to take that next step. And so I don't think me choosing a different direction at any certain point in time would have led me to any different place. I think that every experience helped me to get here. And if I would have experienced something else, I still would have gotten here. Just maybe in a different roundabout way.
Interesting.
Yes.
That's an interesting perspective on it. I also feel that, you know, everything that's happened in my life has led me to where I am today. But I don't know if I made different decisions along the way, if I would be the same person that I am today. I think that I'm kind of a compilation of all my experiences and who I am. So I just can't imagine my life without gymnastics, for example, or even not going to the gym that I grew up in. It just was such a formative experience. And obviously, University of Florida has been such a surreal 3 years so far, and I've learned so much and grown so much from just being here in Gainesville on this team. And I'm sure if I was anywhere else, I would be a completely different person than I am today. So that's a super cool perspective on it. And I want to revisit what you said at the very beginning. You mentioned that your life has turned out differently than you would have imagined it as a kid. And tell me more about that. How has it been different and maybe better than you expected?
Yeah. So I think growing up, I was just very academic. Like I happened to do a lot of athletic things, but those were fun. Those were like an escape for me. I didn't think of that as like work or a possible career path or anything in that nature. I was a very studious person, and school came quite easy for me, but I still had the work ethic and wanted to put in the time. So I was really focused on a medical career of some way, shape, or form. I didn't know if I wanted to be a surgeon, if I wanted to do internal medicine. I knew that I was really good at biology. I really was interested in human anatomy and kinesiology. I loved the study of muscle and movement and things of that nature. And so I was pretty focused on like med school path. That's what I, you know, when I was making my decision first to go to the University of Nebraska, I was a pre-med major. That was what I was focusing on. And so, yeah, it was just really crazy to have this, that whole philosophy of like, I need to make a living, that concrete living that my mom reinforced, to like switch over to my dad's side more so and just really follow my heart and my passion and move in that direction. So that's that shift that I was talking about.
Yeah. Wow. I can totally see that you are a super intelligent and studious person, but what are you most proud of?
That's a great question. I'm super proud of my family. I'm so thankful for the relationships that I have with my dad and my mom and my stepmom and my brother and my sister. We're so close. And, you know, my parents went through a divorce when I was about 6 years old. It took about 4 years to finalize, but my brother and sister and I grew so close together through that process. And really, really thankful for our friendship, you know, like the time that we don't talk every day, but we try to check in at least once a week or every 2 weeks. And those conversations give me so much life, so much invigoration. And we just laugh and talk about so many funny memories about growing up and just the past. I'm really thankful for the relationships I have with my family. They mean everything to me.
That's super special. And I just love conversations, whether it's in person or over the phone. Thank goodness for FaceTime, but talking to family or people that you've known for a long time. And when you have those shared experiences and are just able to like laugh and feel refreshed and de-stressed, that's the best. Shifting gears a little bit, what advice do you have for young athletes?
I think the best advice for young athletes was the same advice that was given to me by my coaches, and that is to do it for as long as you love it. They would always instill that in me. We would always have those conversations whenever training got really tough. Of course, the conversation was had that it's not always going to be easy and you're not always going to love it. But at the end of the day, do it because you love it. You know, do your craft, whether it's gymnastics, whether it's whatever you love to do, do it because it fuels you. You're passionate about it. You love it. It just means everything to you. And to love the work, I think that's another really important piece of advice too, is I think a lot of people love the result, the product, the opportunity to compete, or the finished product, finishing the school project, whatever it may be. But if you can truly find joy and passion and energy in the work, the process of getting to that competition or that net result for whatever you're working toward, you've got it made, because that's the day-to-day. That's the grind. That's the, you know, finding the excitement in learning a new skill, finding the excitement in perfecting a skill that you've done for 10 years. You know, I think just really being passionate and doing the work, caring about the work, taking pride in your work. I think that's the best advice I can give.
Wow, that is such great advice. And it definitely resonates with me in loving the process of becoming a better gymnast. And I've always loved the sport and loved flipping, but being able to just enjoy the whole scheme of working towards your goals and just day in and day out, loving the grind. I think that's so important, because otherwise you're not gonna get to where you wanna go if you don't enjoy it. And it makes it so much more fun. I mean, if it's not enjoyable, it doesn't feel worth doing a lot of the time. So that's such great advice. And would you say that you found that in the work that you do now?
I struggle with that still every day because it is hard. You know, that day-to-day grind is hard, you know, but I think it's just, I'm a checklist person. I'm a cross off boxes and tick off accomplishments kind of person. And so if you're able to narrow down your productivity and say, these are the small steps that I want to accomplish today, stop always looking about big picture. It's good to have big picture on the radar, but that doesn't need to be the day-to-day focus. You know, if you can accomplish two or three small tasks that move you in the direction of that bigger picture, that's a win for the day, you know? And so I think just being able to look at what your goals are and where you're headed and what's on your plate, and then be able to look at it as a step, each one as a step, and not trying to jump an entire staircase, that is the most effective way for me to get to where I want to go, is to just take one step at a time, cross off one thing at a time, and then move on to the next day and continue that trend.
Definitely. I think that's another great piece of advice, and so practical, because if you're always focusing on that big picture, it's easy to lose sight of your progress, honestly. And being able to even literally check off on a piece of paper, like, yes, I did this today. Yes, I made an improvement. It's that little boost of motivation that makes you want to keep going, at least in my experience. I have to-do lists and intention lists everywhere, post-its. I have all these long Word document lists. I'm definitely a list person. But just being able to mark that check and feel good about myself that this was a useful thing that I did and it's getting me to where I want to be. But also, I enjoyed that today. I felt good working hard. I feel accomplished. I feel purposeful. That is when I feel most energetic and the happiest, honestly. So a little bit of a logistical question for you. How do you keep up your energy with all that you do? I know you have long, long sessions of choreography sometimes. And even when you choreograph our floor routines, when you do three people in a day, 3 hours each, I just can't even imagine dancing constantly for 9 hours straight. And I know that you're probably used to it over the years, but it seems insane. And how do you do it?
Wow, that I baffle myself sometimes, to be quite honest with you. I love eating well. I have always enjoyed eating good, healthy food. That's always just been, I know that when I eat certain things, my body feels a certain way. And so I think just over the years of, you know, trial and error, trying things and things not working and feeling like by 3 p.m. I have absolutely no energy and I can't continue on with my day. What was my nutrition source that day? And what, you know, what went wrong? How can I solve that moving forward? I just love eating healthy food. I crave healthy food. I desire healthy food. And so just putting together a meal structure and being prepared, that's the whole list thing that we were just talking about, you know, like being prepared for what's on your plate for that day. If I have a work day that takes me until 9 or 10 p.m. and I'm not going to be able to be home in time to have a 6 p.m. dinner or whenever I normally eat, you have to plan accordingly and have all that prepared. And so just being ready for your day, I think that's probably what helps me to withstand the long hours. But I also just really love what I do. I get lost in the day-to-day because I'm so passionate about the creativeness, the work, the artistic side of it. I just love to dive in. And I, 3 hours later, I didn't realize 3 hours just went by. You know, I don't find myself looking at the clock every 15 minutes like, oh gosh, when is this session going to be over? When is this rehearsal going to be over? Or when can I clock out? You know, that kind of thing. I've always been so locked in to what I'm doing and how I can create and what's a more interesting way to get from point A to point B that the time just kind of goes. And I don't even have to think about like, oh gosh, I'm dreading this, or I don't look forward to this, or I'm, you know, I'm going to be here for these many hours doing these many routines. So I just think being prepared for the day, nutrition wise, knowing what's on your plate and being able to schedule your breaks when you need it, that type of thing, but also just really fully submersing yourself into your work. If you fully invest your time and effort into whatever you're doing, the product will be your best and the time will fly by. You won't even know that you just spent 9 hours dancing.
Yeah, that's crazy. It seems like you really prepare yourself well to find that flow state and get lost in what you're doing, but also having that, like we've been talking about, that practical sense, but also being able to just be present and enjoy the moment throughout. On that note a little bit, how do you stay creative with choreography and continuously come up with new ideas? Do you ever feel a dancer's block, I guess, for lack of better terminology?
I try to look at each, when I'm going into any choreographical session, I try to be the right amount of prepared, because I think there is such a thing as being underprepared, just as there is such a thing as being overprepared. And so if I'm able to find that window right in between of just being the right amount of prepared, I am flexible enough to just explore and try new things and just see where whomever I'm working with, the work will go. But I also have an agenda in terms of like if we're speaking about floor routine choreography, like where I feel like the most logical place would be for each of the tumbling passes. And I try to do as much research as possible on that given athlete to make sure any movement that they've done in the past, what looks good on them, what doesn't. Do they typically like their leaps between their first and second pass versus their second and third? Do they like to tumble within the first 5 seconds of their routine, or do they need 20 seconds to move around and get comfortable and get that adrenaline out before the first pass happens? And then, of course, what skills they're doing. So to be prepared in terms of what they're capable of and what they've done in the past and do all of that given research and knowing the music, but also being flexible enough to not have it choreographed already and just teaching them a dance. That it's like you said, like a very flow, give and take type of situation where I'm giving feedback and or being more or less a guide to what feels logical in the athlete's body.
Gotcha. And being on the other side of that, at least a couple of times when you've choreographed my floor routines, you do such a great job of just working with athletes, honestly, and being able to see what looks great and feels right. And I just so much appreciate you dealing with all of my, yeah, I don't really want my head down before I tumble, or I don't want to spin around this much. I think I might get dizzy before I have to do my double back, or, you know, maybe we need a little bit more time before this tumbling pass, and just your ability to adapt to those things and make it look amazing and fit all of my crazy needs. And I'm sure other people do similar things, but fitting those needs while still making something beautiful and a great routine that doesn't sacrifice the choreography for crazy gymnasts' minds or anything like that. And honestly, every time you create something, it just seems so different. And that's what boggles my mind, is that you can come up with all of these totally different styles and different movements that are just so unique and different from one another. It seems like so many people have a style, but you're so good at so many styles. Do you think that comes from your training or your crazy diversity in performing, or is that just your incredible mind? Where do you think that kind of stems from?
Well, first of all, thank you so much for those compliments. I think a lot of it is training. I think that the University of Florida in particular, their dance program really instilled in me the versatility of a dancer. You know, we were exposed to so many different forms. We did West African dance, we did ballet, we did jazz, we did tap, we did lyrical, we did modern, we did Graham, we did Limon, we did Jose, we did contemporary, we did everything. We literally did everything. And so feeling like you could just slide into that type of movement vocabulary comfortably was really important to me in my training and that process. And the same goes for when I start to teach and work with gymnasts in particular. You know, a lot of them don't come from a super dance background, but we all are very familiar with our bodies. You know, all gymnasts have excellent air awareness. They might not necessarily know their right from their left every single time, but they know where their weight is. They don't, you know what I mean? And so having that dialogue and being able to communicate, where's your weight? How do you feel about this? I really try to give the athlete as much ownership as possible, because that's what makes that unique signature on that routine. If I come into a session already having it choreographed, I think we all default to a specific style, you know, and I'm sure my style would then default to the entire team. And that's never my goal, is I want someone to look at our routines at the University of Florida and say, surely 19 different choreographers worked with these 19 athletes. You know, that's honestly what I don't want it to say, oh, that looks like a Jeremy routine. I want it to say, wow, that's amazing. That looked completely different than that person compared to that person compared to that person, so that they all just have a very special, unique signature. And that unique signature is the athlete performing it? Because she had an opinion, she had an input, she was given value to the process. She helped to pick out the music. You guys do an awesome job with that conversation. Not all of you know exactly what you want. Some of you do. Some of you have a very specific idea in mind of what you want musically. Others are like, give me some ideas. I have no idea what to do this year. But taking the time to figure out what musically is going to suit that person the best, and then giving them that freedom, obviously helping them along the way, but giving them that freedom to give me feedback, to say that feels weird or that's strange or I need more time or that's too much twisting, and not having it prepared. Because if I had it prepared, I would want to default to that every single time. And then I would reach that block that you're talking about because that's the way I did it in my head. This is the way it needs to be. But I don't have a way that it needs to be. And so that's what opens up those possibilities that anything could go here. Let's try all of them and see what feels the best. So I definitely think training was a huge, huge factor, but also just being able to collaborate with different learning styles. I think that's the most exciting thing for me in that 3-hour process is to figure out how each of you learn, because each of you learns so differently. And if I only taught in one style, like I'm going to show you exactly what I want, the routines wouldn't be where they are. I think they would be in a completely different place. And so I'm thankful that you guys each go on that ride with me every single year. It's something that I always look forward to. It's super, super exciting. I think a lot of other people would think, especially this year with, you know, 18, 19 possible athletes, that, oh my gosh, that sounds so daunting to do that many routines. And it just excites me. That's going to be so much fun to get 19 opportunities to work one-on-one with you guys and make something special.
Well, I know I love getting my floor routine choreographed, and I'm sure everyone else does as well, because it's honestly such a pleasure to work with you. And I think you have definitely accomplished that goal of creating 19 completely different floor routines, or however many gymnasts are on the team that year, because everyone's routine is just so different and really reflects a personal style. And it's such a skill to have, honestly. With that, what is your favorite part about working with the Florida Gators?
Oh my gosh, where do I begin? First of all, you guys are all so incredibly talented. Each year, it's like peeling back layers of an onion. It's so cool to see each athlete's growth. From their freshman season all the way to their senior season, and just to see how the team dynamic is every year. You know, I'm not there for the day to day. And so I feel like I see a lot more of the changes that take place, because I'll come in and I'll work with you guys and we'll get all the routines done. And then I'll check back in a couple weeks or a month down the road. And just, I can see a lot bigger of those transitions not being there every single day. And so that's so amazing to have that vantage point, to be able to check back in every once in a while and just see where things have shifted. And it's just such an amazing place. I think that Jenny Rowland, along with the rest of her staff, have just done such an incredible job creating such an atmosphere of success and positivity and support and unity and individuality. And I thought we came a really long way, especially this COVID year, with all of our Zoom meetings and such that we were able to partake in over the summer. It just is so amazing to see everybody grow. And I'm just so thankful to be a part of that experience and that growth, and to see everybody just blossom in the program.
Definitely. Well, the Florida Gators gymnastics team is certainly blessed to have you and is so much better with you there. And I want to finish up with a couple of fun questions, just quick rapid fire. I've only got three, but short answer kind of questions that I think are kind of fun. So first, what is your favorite Disney character?
Ooh, Merlin, for sure. Sword in the Stone was by far my favorite. I did love Cinderella. I take that back. Cinderella was by far my favorite growing up. But now as an adult, I loved Sword in the Stone. The underdog that's able to pull the sword from the stone. But Merlin is such a hoot. And then he's got his little owl Archimedes that is just a riot. Their banter back and forth is hysterical. I love that. I love that Disney movie. Yeah.
That's a good one for sure. Awesome. If you were a dog, what kind would you be?
Now, if you would have asked me that 5 or 6 years ago, I would have said a golden retriever because I always had golden retrievers growing up. But during COVID, I did acquire a new family member. Will, the Wheaton Terrier, is a new member of the family. We just really loved his personality. He's so energetic. He's so happy all the time. I feel like I learn so much from him every single day just to not hold grudges. He forgives you immediately. He's just very positive, very happy. And so I would say a Wheaton Terrier.
Aw, and Will is so adorable. And I follow the Instagram account, and I'm sure some listeners would love to see your dog as well. So where can they find your dog?
Yes, he is at Will Wheaton on Instagram.
All righty, everybody go take a peek. You will not regret it for sure. Last little question here. Have you ever encountered a dance move that you just couldn't figure out?
I don't think a specific dance move, dance style. Hip hop, it was always hard for me. It was hard for me to be really grounded and isolate anything in my rib cage. I never had a ton of back flexibility, and like the amount of, I had a very strong core. And so I felt like coming from the gymnastics world where everything is strong and held and not, you know, much fluidity through the body, that hip hop was hard because you had to have that range of motion, but you had to be able to isolate and just specify a very specific muscle group to articulate. So that took me the longest, I think, to figure out, to like get in my body, to make it make sense. And I'm not a really hard-hitting type dancer anyway. I like that more elegant, painty, flow, ballet modern kind of feel, I guess. More of a lyrical type quality. So I would say hip hop is probably the hardest, not any particular dance move, but that style is hard.
Yes, I definitely agree that hip hop is pretty tricky, and that makes a lot of sense. And I have one more signature question for you, and it is, what adds zest to your life? Something outside of creating amazing things that excites you?
Oh my gosh. I mean, I just moved down to Florida full time 2 years ago, and I am so in love with the weather down here. Just the sun, just feeling like getting in my pool, just being one with nature. I felt like that was something that was really missing in my life in New York City, is there's a real detachment from nature and the city because it is literally a concrete jungle there. You have to make a concerted effort to go to Central Park or Washington Square Park or one of the park options, and it's still inundated with millions of people at the park. So here I feel like you're able to just be a little more connected with nature, and with the weather being so great year round, you've experienced the winters here. It's just amazing to be able to ride on your scooter in shorts and a t-shirt to class in January, you know? I would say the weather definitely invigorates me.
Nice. Been one of my favorite things about living in Florida so far as well. Thank you so, so much for doing this with me. I had so much fun, and I'm sure there are gymnasts out there listening who would love to purchase a piece of your specially designed floor music, or maybe even have you choreograph their routine. So where can listeners find you?
Absolutely. I am online. My website is jeremyjamesmiranda.com. You can find me in any Google search or Yahoo search or anything like that. And I would love to work with you on custom making floor music and maybe even creating a routine.
And I will link that website in the show notes so anybody can find it super quickly. Well, once again, thank you so much. This was so much fun. And I really appreciate you hopping on the podcast.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Leah. I appreciate it.
I really enjoyed this interview with Jeremy, and I hope you did too. I'm so glad I got to learn more about Jeremy's background and approach to choreography, and it was so fun chatting about the balance between being realistic and a dreamer, plus the balance between preparation and freestyle. Always feel free to reach out via social media. My Instagram is @LeahClapper5, and I would absolutely love to hear what resonated with you most. Finally, thank you so much for being part of the Zest and Progress community. Please, please, please share this episode with friends and family. It would really mean a lot. Have a wonderful day and go zest it up. Talk to you next time.